International.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. This evening, we continue our preview of the African Nations Championship Football Tournament, also called CHAN. The competition kicks off Saturday when Cameroon will host Zimbabwe in the opening match in Yaounde. Our VOA football fans will remember CHAN is for African players who compete in their home country leagues. So we won't see big African stars like Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who are all based in England. And some of Africa's traditionally strong teams are missing from CHAN. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Sammy Wajia.
Lots of the big countries will not be there. Nigeria will not be there. Ghana, Senegal, Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt. Just to mention a few, these countries are not going to be taking part in the CHAN. And yes, it's going to take some of the glamour away from the tournament because the neutrals and the fans of these countries will want to watch these nations play, participate. They usually bring a lot of razzmatazz and glamour, eye candy to the tournament. So their unavailability and the unavailability of their star players at this tournament will definitely take the shine, some shine at least, of the tournament. Having said that, I also think that looking at this from the flip side, the other countries who are there representing the central zone, central eastern zone, northern, southern, western zone A and B of the Confederation of African Football should also throw their hat in the ring. Countries like Congo, Congo DR, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, Libya, Morocco, Namibia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Togo, and obviously the host nation Cameroon. It's time for these countries and the players that will be representing them to say, yes, we know that some of the big countries in Africa are not going to be taking part in this competition, but it's time for us to throw our hat in the ring and show that we deserve our place in the tournament.
Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Algeria, and Tunisia are some of the countries absent from CHAN 2021. Do you think this has to do with their domestic leagues?
I don't think it will be correct to make a blanket statement as far as this is concerned, because for some of those countries you could say the answer is in the affirmative and not so much so in other cases. I'll narrow down to Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal. I don't think the leagues are as strong as they used to be in the past. For instance, in Nigeria, it's well documented that apart from Enyimba International, no Nigerian club has ever won the CAF Champions League title. The league, yes, inroads, important inroads, positives have been recorded, especially this season, but I think a lot still to be achieved. Also, the Ghanaian and Senegalese leagues could be better. Like I said, I don't think we can make blanket statements as far as this is concerned, because Egypt, for instance, will not be taking part in the CHAN, but the Egyptian league is in rude health and is exemplified by what their clubs are doing on the continent. In the CAF Champions League, for instance, two Egyptian clubs, Al Ahly and Zamalek, have made it to the group stages of the competition. In the CAF Confederation Cup, the Egyptians are also throwing their weight about. Pyramids FC have qualified for the playoff round of the competition. And the Algerian league is also in very good health. Two Algerian clubs have qualified for the group stages of the CAF Champions League, CR Belouizdad and MC Alger. In the CAF Confederation Cup, there are two Algerian clubs in the playoff round as well, Jeunesse Sportive de Kabylie and Entente Sétif. So I don't think the failure of these countries outlined not qualifying for the CHAN has everything implicitly to do with the state of the domestic game or the leagues in those countries.
Do you also think that CHAN has lived up to expectations in raising the profile of domestic African players?
To be totally honest with you, no, I don't think Chan has lived up to its billing in this context, because if you ask the average player in sub-Saharan Africa especially, they'll tell you that their biggest hope is to move abroad. They want to go to Europe and play for Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester United, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona. But that's not the reason why CAF came up with the idea of this tournament. It's basically to give those individuals who ply their trade domestically a chance to shine, you know, achieve their full potential, play for the national teams. But you have to say majorly, it's not happening. Maybe in South Africa, maybe in North Africa to an extent, yes, it does happen, because the leagues in those countries are a lot better organized than the leagues in sub-Saharan Africa. But I do not think this competition has achieved its full potential, because like I said, a lot of the players in sub-Saharan Africa will tell you that their major aim is to play in Europe. And one of the aims that CAF sought to achieve by coming up with this tournament was to ensure that most of these domestic talent who ply their trade within their different geographical areas get a chance to play with the national teams. I'll use Nigeria as a case study. It's not happening. It's not happening in Nigeria. The head coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria, Gennaro Rohr, doesn't actually look inward, so to speak, doesn't look at the Nigeria Professional Football League to select players to represent the Super Eagles. And dispassionately, can I blame him? I'd rather not say so, because if you look at what the league is about in Nigeria today, you have to say the coach has a point when he says he doesn't want to look inwards and select players from the Nigeria Professional Football League.
That's African football analyst Sammy Wejia. And Sammy spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Sammy Wejia, Port Harcourt-based sports analyst. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Joining us with a package of African sports news is Samson Omale. And Samson says he'll be kicking off with the Chan tournament in Cameroon.
Cameroon is now ready to host the Total African Nations Championship, Chan 2020, which is a competition organized for players playing in their domestic leagues across Africa. It kicks off on Saturday, January 16th, 2021. The competition was initially set to be held in April 2020, but was shifted to the 16th of January 2021 by the Confederation of African Football as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. A total of 16 teams are spread across four groups and will be competing for the top honors. Group A will have Cameroon, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Zimbabwe battling for the top two spots for the quarterfinals, while Libya, Niger, DR Congo, and Congo are in Group B. Morocco, Rwanda, Togo, and Uganda are in Group C, while Group D will have the likes of Zambia, Guinea, Namibia, and Tanzania. Football giants like Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt, and Tunisia all failed to qualify for this year's tournament. Some of the coaches have been speaking on their expectations ahead of the tournament. Jonathan McKinstry is Uganda Cranes head coach.
Expectation after the Mini-Chan tournament is really to have our players in the best possible position to start Chan itself. It's a great opportunity to acclimatize to the conditions here in Cameroon. Yeah, it's a great preparation for us. We're playing against difficult opponents.
For his sport, Zambia coach Milton Mitchell Sredarovic is confident that his squad has the capacity to progress from the group stages of the tournament.
I'm happy with the squad we are having. We have touch of experience from some players. Rest of the teams, I believe we have the best of the best, and we have what it takes to enter in competition, pass the group, and then from first match to look every match as a cup final.
Away from the Chan 2020 now to weightlifting, where Nigeria will participate in the African Weightlifting Championships slated for April 1 to April 8th at Vakhouse in Mauritius. Christopher Nwade, the technical director of the Nigerian Weightlifting Federation, confirmed that the tournament will serve as an Olympic qualifier. 8 weightlifters, 6 female and 2 males, will represent the country at the championships. And finally, Chelsea and Cote d'Ivoire legend Didier Drogba has revealed that his 10-year marriage with his Malian wife, Lala Dekati, is over after appearing in an intimate video in bed with a mystery woman.
Drogba, who is now 42 years old, met Diakite in the late 1990s in Paris and the married in 2011. Drogba enjoyed two spells at Chelsea, winning several titles, including four Premier League titles and the Champions League in 2012. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitrović-Sredović, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In English Premier League football news, former Manchester United manager Alex Ferguson and the club's top scorer, Wayne Rooney, have praised Marcus Rashford for the striker's role in tackling child food poverty in England amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The 23-year-old Rashford has been at the forefront of a campaign to end child food poverty. He successfully lobbied the British government to continue providing free school meals during the holidays. On Thursday, the Football Writers Association named Rashford the winner of its annual Tribute Award, and afterwards, Sir Alex Ferguson also paid tribute.
I'd like to congratulate Marcus on his achievement in his presentation tonight. Known him since we were a kid at 7 years of age and seen him develop through the ranks at Manchester United into a truly wonderful person. Apart from his football life, what he's achieved in the last few months is quite astonishing. How he's helped the people in need is a truly amazing achievement, and I'd like to congratulate him on that. He's shown to young people in particular there is a different way of dealing with life. He's shown great humility. He's shown courage to do what he did. And so this achievement is well deserved, and it should be recognised in what he's done. So Marcus, well done. Fantastic achievement.
We heard Alex Ferguson say he's known Marcus Rashford since he was 7 years old. Rashford joined the Man U Academy at that age, and he says Ferguson has always supported his football career.
Yeah, he's always, you know, from the beginning, really, he's backed me with what I'm doing. And probably when other people in sports, they was telling me, you know, not to do it, focus on football, blah, blah, blah. He said if I believed in it and I believe it's the right thing to do, then he's behind it. And yeah, them words from him, it's an amazing feeling to hear that.
Marcus Rashford has scored 51 Premier League goals in 159 appearances for Manchester United, Man U's all-time leading scorer with 183 goals in the Premier League is Wayne Rooney. The 35-year-old Rooney has been a player manager recently for the English club Derby County, and he also praised Rashford for his humanitarian efforts.
The work he's doing is unbelievable to challenge the government. It's a big issue, you know, it's a tough time for everyone, so for him to get that campaign up and running and the free meals, the meals for the children, is massive, and it's needed that backing, someone like Marcus Rashford to back that and get behind it and make sure that the kids know that whatever happens, they won't go hungry. So it's incredible, really, and I think it's a huge achievement from him. And as a player, he's a great player. He's got a real bright future, of course, and it's great to see him scoring more goals now, and he will be a massive player for Manchester United and England over the next 10 years. So it's good to see him developing, and I could see him being the next England number nine in a few years.
For his part, Marcus Rashford says there's still a lot of work to be done to end child food poverty in England.
That's a big issue for me and my team that are working on it. The amount of numbers that still don't have the support that they need. We know we've managed to reach a lot more people that weren't getting reached. But there's still people out there that are really struggling, and if we can make a 5-10% difference to every single one of their lives, then it puts everyone at a good baseline, and then we can start to work on foundations for the future. But until everyone's on the same playing field, it's difficult to start jumping ahead and asking for things that are necessary, but the timing would be wrong. So we need to make sure everyone's on the same level first, and then we can start to improve that level until they're where they belong.
Meanwhile, Marcus Rashford says Manchester United will consider this a successful season only if the team wins the Premier League. Man U has a 3-point lead over second place Liverpool. The teams will meet in a top-of-the-table clash Sunday at Anfield. Rashford says it's definitely a game he's looking forward to, and he's hoping Man U can pick up 3 points and a win on the road. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
One of the oldest surviving Olympians has received a late-in-life health boost. Joining us now with that story is Dan Friedel. Sporty greetings, Dan!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In recent weeks, we've been hearing from the IOC about whether international athletes can get the coronavirus vaccine so that the 2020 Olympics can take place this summer in Japan. Now, international sports executives are trying to diplomatically gain favor for the idea of providing a couple hundred doses of vaccine to potential Olympians from each country so the games can go ahead later this year. However, they don't want to jump the queue and take the vaccine away from elderly people. So here's a bit of good news related to Olympians and the COVID-19 vaccine. An elderly former Olympian got his shot on Wednesday. John Peek is 96. He was a member of the silver medal winning men's field hockey team at the 1948 Games in London. On Wednesday, when he rolled up his shirt and got the injection, some said he finally won his gold medal. Peek is a resident of a nursing home in the southwest part of London, not far from the famous All England Club in Wimbledon. He and 44 other residents who received the AstraZeneca version of the vaccine were thrilled.
I appreciate the fact that it's come to this place early. I'm only 96, so I appreciate the... it's been very good to have this.
That's John Peek, now 96, who was the youngest member of the British field hockey team in the first Olympics after World War II. peak, and his teammates lost 4-0 to India in the final. The UK has already been using the coronavirus vaccine developed by Pfizer and BioNTech. It has plans to soon start using the drug from Moderna. So far, about 2.5 million people in the UK have received the first dose of a vaccine. Peak was not the oldest person at his nursing home to receive the vaccination. That honor went to Joan Potts, who is 102. Perhaps you could say Peak came in second again. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Dan Friedel.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Yo, yo, yo! For the greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
On the next edition of VOA's Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel speaks with her guests from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom about the state of religious freedom around the world. They'll talk about the success stories of 2020 and the challenges that lie ahead in 2021. Listen for it on Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go down under to Australia, where rope free falling off a cliff has become one of the latest adventures for some daring athletes. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On any given sunny afternoon in New South Wales, Australia, you're bound to run into a dozen friends who have united in a shared passion for an activity that's not for the faint of heart. There you will witness the proclaimed Aussie adventure sport enthusiasts free flying, a kind of bungee jumping, rope swinging hybrid, but with much longer free falls. On this day, 24-year-old Daisy Allen has gathered with her rope jumping mates atop a cliff nearly 200 feet above the ocean. And she tells Reuters the key to jumping from such dizzying heights is to focus on the breath.
Definitely at the beginning, there's a lot of fear that comes up, like you're amygdala, your survival brain is really kicking in because you're really, every part of you is trying to rationalize the safety aspect because obviously you only jump because you know it's safe, right? So for me, it's a matter of just calming down, centering myself, really focusing in on my breathing, which is an aspect of this that I really love because it really forces me into that state of mindfulness and pure awareness.
Allen's partner, Tom Oliver, says it's that state of awareness that stops the mental chatter before taking a leap of faith.
There's two conversations going on in your head. One's trying to talk you out of it, and the other one's trying to talk you into it. And you start listening more to the one that's trying to talk you into it and less to the one that's talking you out of it. And for me, not overthinking it. So just having full faith in everything. And then, yeah, having someone double check you as well, having your buddies there to make sure you are safe. And then once the rope's just in your hands, you just have to make the decision to step off. That's often the hardest part.
Free flying or rope jumping originated in the 90s and has gained popularity over the past decade. To perform it, jumpers strap themselves to a harness with a rope that's attached to another line strung between two cliffs on either side. After achieving mindfulness and calming the nerves, they step off the edge and enjoy a free fall towards the ocean's surface before rope tension thankfully pulls them back. The rope then grows taut, and after some moments of swinging back and forth over the sea, half a dozen friends at the top work in unison to pull the jumper back up the cliff and onto solid ground. And Tom Oliver says the people are the most important part of the adventure.
It's mostly about the people, because I can go to a beautiful place so easily alone, but the people make the big difference for me and who's involved. It's like an informal tribe, and there's so much trust and faith put in each other, and everyone's going through hardship in some way, and sharing that, it's just special. I don't know. Can't put any more words to that.
In Daisy Allen's own words, free flying is the equivalent of overcoming fear.
For me, it's a process. I went from being really afraid and taking these first jumps off or exposures to heights and just desensitizing myself and just training my neural pathways that my survival brain is actually limiting me from being able to experience really amazing things.
Daring sports enthusiasts are certainly doing really amazing things in Australia. And that is all from me for today and for the week. More sporty news to come. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
In National Basketball Association action Thursday night, the Philadelphia 76ers picked up their ninth win of the season with a victory over the visiting Miami Heat. The AP's Michael Luongo reports from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Shake Milton came off the bench to lead the 76ers to a 125-108 win over the Heat. Milton scored 11 points during a 14-1 run that gave Philadelphia an 8-point lead after the first quarter. Milton scored the final 8 points of a 12-2 run that pushed the Sixers' lead to 17 in the second quarter. A 13-2 run capped by a basket by Tobias Harris pushed the lead to 25 in the third. Milton finished with a season-high 31 points. Harris added 18.
Yeah, this guys being out could be a blessing and a curse of a lot of teams. But the blessing of it is you see different guys be able to step up and be ready. And when their name is called, you know, you can trust them.
Michael Luongo, Philadelphia.
Thanks, Michael. In Portland, Oregon, the Portland Trailblazers lost to the visiting Indiana Pacers Thursday night, 111-87. Before the loss, the Blazers had some real bad news. Their talented big man, Bosnian center Yusuf Nurkic, broke his right wrist while contesting a shot in the third quarter. Nurkic was averaging more than 10 points and almost 8 rebounds a game entering that contest. Nurkic has had some bad injury luck lately. He missed much of last season after breaking his left leg in a game in 2019. In the three other NBA results Thursday night, the Toronto Raptors topped the Charlotte Hornets 111-108. In a Texas showdown, the Houston Rockets beat the San Antonio Spurs 109-105, and the Denver Nuggets defeated the Golden State Warriors 114-104.
up the January 15th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.